Hello, thank you for listening to The Joy of Yes with me, Graham Pate, and my guest, Paul Blinov.
You mentioned you started doing improv in 2004?
2003.
Yeah. How did you get started with improv?
With the high school festival. I grew up in Fort McMurray, Alberta, which is 5 hours north of Edmonton. And was fortunate to go to a high school that had a really amazing drama teacher, a woman named Karen Towsley, who's retired now, just amazing in theater and as an artist herself, and the things she could bring out in the youth was amazing. And so there was a really great improv team at my high school. I remember seeing them first at like a junior high sort of weekend day. It was sort of a thing where all the junior highs go, and it was about leadership and that sort of thing. But they performed, and it was like, oh, cool, that seems so fun. I wanna try that. And so when I got to high school, I auditioned and did not get in, you know, which was great. And then I sort of got a year of being like, oh, is this something I really want to keep doing and exploring and trying, and would do it in class and still had some opportunities. And then got on my high school team as an alternate. And at that time, there wasn't really a centralized festival like Rapid Fire runs now. It was sort of, there was the Nose Bowl, which is sort of Rapid Fire's high school theater sports tournament. That was Edmonton, and that was what all the Edmonton teams did. And then the Canadian Improv Games was this national festival. But Edmonton wasn't really that interested in it. They had the Nose Bowl, and that was that. So it would be Fort McMurray and like Panoka and New Norway and High River and Red Deer and all these small sort of towns would be the ones who would be doing improv for the Canadian Improv Games. So did that for 2 years, I guess, in high school. Went to the national festival a bunch. And then when I moved to Edmonton for school, auditioned for Rapid Fire and have been doing it ever since. Which is a lot to think about when I really think about that. It's a long time. I feel like I've done improv longer than anything that isn't like a basic human function. Like, done it longer than school now, you know, done it longer than any other, like, recreational thing I do. So, here we are. I guess I'm still getting something from it.
What is it that keeps you doing it?
Oh, that's a great question. It's a mix of, like, it's something I feel I've achieved a certain level or proficiency in, and so I like doing it at that level. I like being able to do an art at what I would consider a level that I feel happy with. It is constantly surprising, you know, even with people I've been performing with for 10 years at this point. Still, they'll throw me a curveball or something that I haven't seen coming, and I get a lot of joy out of being surprised in those ways now. And there is a little bit of, like, I find a lot of inspiration in the people who are coming up, in the younger folks who do, whether they come out of the high school festival or university groups or public workshops or any of those things. They always bring a different perspective, I feel. And I feel like Rapid Fire has been pretty good as a company in my time there about, especially now, sort of like taking in those perspectives and giving them a place to be that thing, not trying to like build them into a single mold type of improviser. As more people come into the company, I find myself looking to them to be like, yeah, that's... You do this in such an exciting way. That's awesome. That reminds me that this is still exciting and can be exciting and keeps me from slipping into like complacent habits.
I love watching you on stage.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I call it observational humor.
Okay.
You know, where you say the obvious or you observe something, which mm-hmm. I find so funny.
Thank you. I think in part of that, especially in improv, sometimes the obvious is so funny, but we burn past it because it's obvious. Like one of the best pieces of improv advice I've ever gotten was from Corey Mathewson, who's another improviser in the company. And he just said, like, just slow down and listen to the things that come out of your mouth. And it's so true because you're making it up. You'll say something in an unusual way, or you'll switch two words, or you'll say you're standing when really you're like crouching or something. And it's just those little things that, like, if you're just present and paying attention to it and then draw attention to it, that can be very satisfying, and an audience can really enjoy that. And also just for your own sense of entertainment, which is always a part of improv as well. There's like a little bit of like, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that is. I should go to the engine room. It's the obvious thing to do.
When I started doing this podcast, I was interviewing Sam and Stephen, mm-hmm. and Stephen mentioned this theory of there are three types of improvisers, mm-hmm. Head, heart, and fist. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that concept?
Yeah.
I'm just curious which one you think you are.
Cool. I think head, if I'm being honest with myself, I tend to be like a pretty cerebral sort of person. And I'm also not a particularly physical improviser. I feel like my notes for years have always been like, yeah, play more characters, like physically play more characters. And I always like track myself on stage and be like, no, I'm just standing and talking again. Womp womp. Here we are. But yeah, so I think I'd be ahead in that sense of someone who's like thinking even that like observational sort of thing is to be like, yeah, right. We all heard that. Great. Cool. Let's put it into a focus and go from there. Whereas like someone like Steven is an amazing physical improviser. He does so much with his body that's just amazing to watch on stage. That's just like, I wish I could do what he does. But for whatever reason, I just can't get it in my head to do that sort of thing. That's his gift in this sort of performance. And mine is something else. But then
equally, if everyone did the same thing, it wouldn't be good.
Right. Or, it's good that people have specialties or, things that come out that is just part of who they are. And that on stage sort of comes out in whatever way it does. This isn't like a if only lament, but I find myself constantly in awe of other people's gifts, which is really, really nice. It's really nice to feel that way about the company you're in. It's like, yeah, you do that thing stunningly well. And I consistently wish I could do that.
But equally, mm-hmm. there are people in the company who are also in awe of what you do well.
Sure. Okay. Great. Sure. Okay. I'll take that. I'll take that. Which is a good place to be. I think like looking to find inspiration in other people is the best way, especially in something like this where it's so much about connection with people on stage. And also what does come out when you're on the spot is a very high stakes way of saying it. But just like when you are just making something up, who are you? There's a book that's just a collection of interviews with a guy named Graham, and I forget his last name, who used to, not you.
Are you sure?
He did a lot of arts interviews for CBC in the like 60s and 70s.
So, not me then.
Not you. He's got interviews with a young Margaret Atwood and Leonard Cohen and people like that. And he in this book that sort of collected a lot of his interviews, one of the questions he almost always asked was like, who are you when you're making your art? Who are you when you're dancing? Who are you when you're writing poetry? And that's an interesting thing to think about, like especially with like a spontaneous art. Although you could argue that even painting while you're painting is, you're spontaneous within that moment. Who are you while you're doing that? And it's interesting to see what the answer to that is. Like, I don't think it's like, now I know who I am, the end. It's just interesting to see what comes out, especially in something where you're constantly making it up and constantly reinventing the character or the place or your approach or whatever format you're using. It's interesting to see what can come out that you didn't know could come out.
Who are you when you're on stage? Maybe different depending on the character, but you are within this realm of a bubble of you as a human being, as a personality, right. And your own comfort zone.
Yeah, there are choices that, I will make that certain other people wouldn't. And that's not even like I would never say that. But just like, just because of by virtue of who I am, there are things I will do that appear obvious to me that other people are like, whoa. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. I see other people do things that blow my mind. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it just made sense. It was just the thing.
You let yourself go. You trust yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you surprise yourself.
Yeah. I think there's like, and there's a lot of joy in being like, oh, this thing came out. Great. Suddenly everything I thought I knew about where this was going or where the scene was or who this character was is different. And it's very fun to live in the moment of what that is and discover that as you're going. There's a theory in improv about sort of discovery versus invention. And, invention is, I give so much exposition and I explain everything I'm doing. And discovery is just feeling a way, starting with an emotion, because then you're going to surprise yourself with how that translates. And that's a fun place to play because you don't know where it's going to be. It feels less structured in a way because it's just what comes out. In this scenario, whatever this character was, if you respond first with an emotion rather than trying to be like, how do I justify this? How do I connect this to what's going on. If you just try and give yourself an authentic, as authentic as you can on stage, emotional reaction, what comes out is surprising. And then that's, if you give yourself permission to be okay with that and see where that goes, that can take you to different places that you would not have got at by just thinking your way through or talking through a scene or whatever the case may be.
The importance of emotion.
The importance of emotion. If I stress one thing forever and ever, it's just like, just care about a thing on stage. Even in in Spider-Man, Enter the Spider-Verse. So no spoilers, but there's a bunch of parallel universe spider folk who end up being in one universe together. And one of them is like a Looney Tunes, like Spider-Ham. So it's like a Porky Pig sort of character. But there's one point when he gets like a really devastating line, they're having, you know, a very emotional talk about what's going on and the stakes of it. And he gets to say the thing that's just like this very poignant thing. And it's like, oh, yeah, even the joke character feels something. The guy who's here for pure comic relief can still have that moment. And we all go like, yeah, Spider-Ham's right. Oh, man, I feel something because of that cartoon version of a cartoon character. In our storytelling brains, we often simplify things. We want, you know, most of the, especially the early stories we learn are good and bad, and it's very obvious. But everything is pretty gray, not even like morally if we talk about the good and the bad, but people are complex and emotions are volatile and emotions change and feelings change. And in improv, you can still honor that. You can still explore those sorts of changes. And it's not like, hey, but he was the angry guy. What the heck? You know, he was playing, or he was the sleepy boss. And it's like, yeah, but the sleepy boss can still also be, you know, a loving father, a caring character. There are things that even sleepy boss cares about, even if they're sleepily cared about. And finding those complexities and playing in that world is fun and also makes for like a richer story. It's like, I feel like the characters feel more unique rather than stock.
And the audience will get much more out of that too.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, they the more they can invest in, even if it's a comedy show, they still want characters they care about and who care about things, because that makes the comedy, it gives it depth, you know, and it gives it spices and flavors that it wouldn't have if it was just like, everything is jokes per minute. Like, those jokes still have to be grounded in something, and emotion is one of the best ways to do that.
Thank you for listening to The Joy of Yes with me, Graham Pate, and my special guest, Paul Blinov. Listen in next week when Paul and I will continue our conversation about all things to do with improv.